Morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 51 degrees under fair skies. Today is Friday, May 16, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. A former Blatchley Middle School teacher spent the morning under intense cross-examination from the defense attorney for Joe Robidoux, the woman's one-time boss accused of sexually assaulting her and two colleagues. Another teacher testified later in the afternoon to having a previous sexual encounter with Robidoux some years earlier, but said she regretted it and had been trying to move on. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Attorney Julie Willoughby asked the state's lead witness to review the alleged assaults in intimate detail, testing her credibility, particularly around an evening in January 2013 when Robidoux visited her at home, allegedly exposed himself, and placed his hands around her neck while saying the words, "This would be easier if you were passed out." Following the incident, the woman sought the counsel of friends who took her to the safe shelter, where she was advised to obtain a criminal trespass order from the Sitka Police Department. Shortly thereafter, police launched an investigation, which eventually produced allegations by two other women working at the school. The defense went to lengths to establish the witness's prior intimate relationship with Robidoux, which the witness admitted was close but non-sexual. She admitted to trying to be one of the cool kids during her divorce in 2009, when she and Robidoux developed their friendship, and regularly attending Friday night evenings out with Robidoux, his wife, and other teachers at Blatchley. She admitted to accepting gifts, including Victoria's Secret lingerie from Robidoux, and wearing it to school, but she denied that these gifts and gifts given to her children conferred any form of sexual consent. "I feel like you're trying to make me out to be someone I'm not," the witness told Willoughby. She flat out denied any sexual relationship with Robidoux and said that rumors of an affair had caused her to take stock of their friendship, and she asked him to stay away, to the point of asking a teacher in the next classroom to find an excuse to stop by any time Robidoux was present. The defense plans to obtain testimony from other school staff in the hope of painting a different picture of their relationship. That won't be necessary with the other alleged victim called to testify Thursday. Also a teacher, she admitted to having sex with Robidoux in her home after a night out partying at a bar. "It was not in my plan," she said. "I did not initiate it. I never had my sights set on Joe Robidoux." She offered this testimony under questioning from the prosecutor, not the defense. Assistant District Attorney Gene Seaton asked, "Did this occur more than a year before the assault?" The witness replied that it had occurred several years earlier. Seaton asked her details of the incident that led to the state's pressing charges against Robidoux. A farewell party on a Friday night in January 2013 after Robidoux announced he was leaving Blatchley for a job in the district office. The woman said she joined a group of fellow teachers at the P Bar around 10 in the evening. She alleged that Robidoux made advances to her that evening, which she rebuffed, but was later waiting on her porch when she went back to her apartment, which was walking distance from the bar. Believing Robidoux to be intoxicated, she drove him home. Parked in his driveway, Robidoux allegedly began to compliment her, to talk about physical relations in his marriage, and then grabbed her wrist and placed her hand on his exposed genitalia. Other witnesses testifying Thursday were a teacher who offered support to the alleged victims as the case was being investigated, and the investigating Sitka Police Detective Jason Sexton. Due to the number of people yet to appear and the possibility that the defense may try to construct its own case, Superior Court Judge David George opened the possibility of extending the trial into Saturday. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Southeast Alaska's Regional Native Corporation had a $35 million net loss in 2013. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from Juneau.
Sea Alaska's annual financial report lists $165 million in revenues, more than $40 million less than the previous year. It also shows $35 million in net losses. Three-quarters of that came from its construction subsidiary, which badly underestimated two federal projects in Hawaii. The report, by the way, says that company's managers are gone and bidding on similar projects has stopped. Other losses came from land entitlement costs. Those include lobbying for federal legislation transferring Tonga's timberlands to the corporation. CEO Chris McNeil says despite the losses, Sea Alaska remains healthy. He says it's following a list of priorities developed about a year and a half ago.
One was to narrow the scope of our operations from companies that don't fit our strategic plan anymore, and we sold the Niprokanok operations, notwithstanding the fact that they were all profitable at the time that we sold them.
The corporation is headquartered in Juneau and has close to 22,000 Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian shareholders. More than half live outside Southeast. Shareholder and longtime critic Brad Flitch says Sea Alaska's losses are a sign of poor management, and he says shareholders should have been informed earlier.
This is just a condemnation of management and their accounting practices and their transparency. To me, it's evident of manipulation of shareholders.
The annual report shows a total loss of more than $50 million. Investments, profitable ventures, and resource earnings from other native corporations shrunk that to $35 million. CEO McNeil says the board and managers are looking for new areas of growth.
We need to be able to acquire another company in order to provide both the income and the opportunity for sustainable development and potential for employment or empowering and capacity building for our own tribal member shareholders.
Flitch doesn't like that idea. He's pushed for smaller regional business development, such as growing and selling berries or flowers.
When you read the annual report, their whole thing is about going out and buying another company, which scares the living daylights out of me. Shareholders cannot afford any more major write-offs. We actually have to start making money.
Sea Alaska's annual report comes out at a time of corporate transition. McNeil is retiring, and a new CEO should be in place this summer. Longtime board president Albert Kukesh is stepping down, though he'll continue as a director. And board member Byron Malott, a former CEO, is leaving to concentrate on his run for governor. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
We have links to the annual report and an explanatory chart posted with this story on our website, kcaw.org. And with severe cuts to its recreation funding over the past few years, the National Forest Service finds itself having to make some tough choices in the Tongass. Which trails and cabins will get funded, which will be allowed to slowly deteriorate until they're no longer usable, and perhaps a third choice, are there citizen volunteers who care enough to take up some of the slack? The 10 Tongass Forest districts are asking for public input to choose recreation niches, areas in which to concentrate their limited financial resources. Ketchikan was the first to nail down its three niches, and the Ketchikan Misty Fjords Ranger District led a meeting last week on the issue. KRBD's Layla Carey attended.
First, a quick rundown on how the Forest Service budget works. There are various pots of money, the largest coming from Congress. That congressional funding goes to the Washington, D.C. office, then filters down through the ranks until it gets to the districts. But that money comes with restrictions. Here's Clark Simpson, the Ketchikan District's recreation program manager.
You can't just, like I said, take money from timber and give it to recreation. When Congress allocates money to timber, they give it to timber to do timber sales. They don't give it to timber to take to maintain trails. They're pretty specific about where they want that money to go.
And because Congress has chosen to cut the Forest Service recreation budget essentially in half over the past 5 years, Tongass National Forest officials had to figure out what they can continue to do. Ketchikan's District Ranger Jeff DeVriest explains that the Tongass leadership team got together to strategize.
The idea is to look at those 10 districts on Tongass and what they're good at or what they're known for, what their what their specialties are.
For example, DeVriest says Prince of Wales Island has identified road access recreation as one of its niches because that island has so many roads compared to other places on the Tongass, and Juneau likely will pick the Mendenhall Glacier. For Ketchikan, a designated niche is the Ward Lake Recreation Area, which is extremely popular with local residents and includes a fair number of well-used trails. Misty Fjords National Monument, a major destination for numerous summertime tourists, also was picked, as was the Hyder Bear Viewing Facility, unique because it's accessible by road from the lower 48. Those leading the meeting spent a good chunk of time explaining the problem. Then they started talking about potential solutions. DeFree says everyone who uses the forest for recreation can help, even in a small way, picking up trash along a trail, for example. Simpson added that he's put in a request to increase fees for cabins. That could help allow continued, albeit limited, maintenance. All cabin fees have to be used for cabins, even if they're not in a niche. Another idea is a volunteer work crew, but they have to be well coordinated. Simpson says it wouldn't be helpful if Forest Service personnel had to organize the volunteers.
But I love the idea of volunteers. So if you, as the public, get a volunteer group together that's really solid and you have good leadership, we can work straight with that leader and be like, we don't even need to be there necessarily half the time. Here's a bunch of loppers, go up and brush that trail. That'd be awesome.
There were no solutions established, no decisions made, no volunteer groups formed during the meeting. It was just the first step, a way to let people know what's happening and to spark ideas for how to help. Simpson says the niche management concept likely will start next summer, so forest officials and forest users have about a year to figure things out. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The Sitka Ranger District will hold its own public meeting in the coming weeks to seek input on where to focus its recreation funding. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. Coming up, it's NPR's Morning Edition. Then I'll be back with you at 18 minutes after the hour with a live local interview about the upcoming Julie Hughes Triathlon. I hope you can join us for that. And just a reminder, residents along Halibut Point Road, whose water was turned off yesterday, are reminded they must boil potable water for at least 24 hours once service is restored. You can call Mike at 907-305-0411 for more information. It's 8:01. Good morning.